Hello, welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, January 6, 2006, and this is episode number 37, the first show of the new year. I am your host, Bob Hayes. Thank you very much for downloading the show. First of all, I want to say thank you to Mike Felice for his generous donation to MotoGP OD. It's always appreciated. Thank you very much. Really do appreciate that. Mike also sent me an email mentioning that a bunch of the guys that he rides with are also listeners. So a big shout out to the Philly Riders Forum and all the other guys that post on the sportbikes.ws website. I took a look around sportbikes.ws and there's about a crap load of different forums and all kinds of stuff for every kind of motorcycle and region of the country and all sorts of other stuff. So I'm definitely been taking a closer look at that one because there is also an Oregon forum that I'm going to want to check out and quite a few other things. There's also some nice plugs for MotoGP OD that other forum members have posted in some of the other forums. That's always nice to see. So thank you very much for that, guys. Another internet forum is always a good thing. You get to make new friends, get new opinions on stuff, whatever. So, you know, you should probably go check it out. Sportbikes.ws, which I think that WS top level domain is Western Samoa. But don't that stop you. Whether you're from the USA, Britain, Japan, you know, anywhere else in the world, including Western Samoa, you definitely might want to check it out. All right, enough plugging of Sportbikes.ws. Let's plug some other podcasts. A show or two ago, I mentioned a couple of fairly new podcasts that I ran across, the Road Racer Podcast at roadracerpodcast.com and Motocast at motocastonline.com. Both of those are very good, well worth a listen. Well, we're all getting together, all of us podcasters, and we're going to sort of do some cross-promotion for each other's shows, strength in numbers, you know, that kind of thing. And I have a confession to make about this whole thing. I've always said that it doesn't matter what you ride, just so long as you ride. And I really do believe that. But frankly, I personally am not too much of a cruiser or chopper, you know, kind of guy. So when I saw a podcast called V-Twin Journal, I sort of thought, you know, okay, that's cool, and never really listened to it. I figured that, you know, it wouldn't really be my thing. Well, I was very, very wrong, and this proves that you can't jump to dumb conclusions, and you can't judge a book by the cover, because I'll tell you, V-Twin Journal is an absolutely excellent show, and he covers a lot of really interesting general motorcycling stuff. You can find it at vtwinjournal.com, all one word, no dashes or anything, just V-Twin Journal. The host is a guy named Greg, and, you know, while his focus might be nominally on cruisers, it's about riding cruisers, you know, not just polishing the chrome. And he makes a very well-produced show, putting in a lot of time into it. He covers maintenance, safety, news, all sorts of stuff. Very interesting stuff. And he's also getting a crap load of good interviews, which is an area that I haven't been having a lot of luck in lately. So, you know, Greg is really raising the bar for motorcycle-related podcasts. And him, along with John at the Road Racer Podcast, and Prubert, Nate, Brandon, and all the other guys at Motocast, they're all definitely setting a good standard. So after you listen to MotoGP OD, and then you're looking for a little more info about some other cool stuff that's going on in the world of motorcycles, you definitely need to check these shows out. All right, one last thing that sort of falls into the business before the show category. You might notice a few small changes at the MotoGP OD website. One of these changes is that I finally added a link to the MotoGP OD store. I started that project quite a while ago and sort of never pursued it for various reasons, but I had someone ask me about a shirt the other day, and I kind of figured that I'd get going on it and actually sort of announce it. Basically, you know, you can get shirts or mugs or other merchandise with the very cool MotoGP OD logo emblazoned on them. There's only a few different items up there right now. I'll probably add stuff as time goes by, you know, see if there's much interest in the whole thing or not. It's a Cafe Press store, and if you're not familiar with Cafe Press, it's this really pretty cool site where you can have them put any kind of graphic onto just about anything that you can think of. There's a lot of shirts, of course, stuff like that, but there's all kinds of other cool stuff, hats, mugs, clocks, just all kinds of stuff. So if you see an item in a different area of Cafe Press and you think it would be cool with the MotoGP OD logo, let me know about it, and I'll see what I can do to set it all up. And as far as the prices go, well, they are what they are. MotoGP OD will make about $1 a unit on that stuff, so not a lot of money. And of course, that money will be going towards paying the bandwidth bill and improving the show in general. But I'm definitely not going to be quitting my day job from the Cafe Press profits anytime soon. So, you know, encourage you to take a look. If you're not interested in it, well, you know, you don't have to take a look. All right. Enough blatant self-promotion and commercialism. Let's get the show on the road. A couple of months ago, there was a news item running around the internet and so forth about an Isle of Man TT-style road race that was going to be happening in, or on, Cape Breton Island in Nova Scotia, Canada. And I mentioned it at the time, but there wasn't a whole lot of details available, so I just sort of gave it a mention. Well, alert MotoGPOD listener Richard Dort emailed me, and he asked me if I had heard anything about this event, you know, any new updates or whatever. At first, I had to tell him that I hadn't heard anything, and that pretty much all I knew about it was that it was going to be scheduled for September 2006, and pretty much, you know, that was it. And, of course, obviously it was going to be in Nova Scotia. Well, like a day or two later, I saw a post on the Speed TV Insiders forum on the internet by forum regular Scotian Lotion, who lives in Nova Scotia, and Scotian passed on the genuine official website that had just been launched for the Cape Breton Festival of Speed. I thought that was very good karma, so it's only right that I pass the news along. The Cape Breton Festival of Speed is a four-day event that will provide competitive motorcycle racing on a challenging 52-kilometer circuit unlike any other in North America. This event is the first ever for North America, and it will shine the spotlight on Cape Breton Island with an expected 15,000 to 20,000 riders, visitors, and media from across the globe. The event is styled after the legendary Isle of Man TT, a true road course classic established in 1907. TT stands for Tourist Trophy, and competitors from the Isle of Man TT will come to Nova Scotia for the event. Event organizers anticipate a large turnout as speed enthusiasts converge on Cape Breton, eager to see the true thrill of the open road. Motorcycles will practice on the Nova Scotia roads near Sydney. This will be specially closed for the occasion on Wednesday and Thursday of September 20th and 21st. Then on Friday the 22nd, there's going to be a charity ride and kind of good stuff like that, a fundraiser. Then on Saturday, September 23rd, 2006, there will be a full program of motorcycle road racing. There's going to be four different classes, a TT Superbike race for machines that are complying with, you know, world superbike regulations, a sidecar TT race for Formula 2 sidecars, a TT Superstock race for bikes that are, you know, world superstock standard, and a Supersport Junior TT for motorcycles that comply with the 2006 World Supersport regs. Then on Sunday the 24th, there'll be a show and shine for cars, pickup trucks, stuff that people aren't interested in, motorcycles, and custom and racing cars, of course. All riders and sidecar monkeys must be in possession of a valid FIM International Non-Championship License for road racing, and every motorcycle entered must conform to the requirements of the FIM Technical Regulations for International Road Racing Events, Group A1 for solos or Group B2 sidecars. So, all of you fans out there of real road racing, which is what they call it, real road racing, and there's even a website, realroadracing.com, and all race fans in general, this sounds like it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Mark your calendars, September 20th through the 24th, 2006, the Cape Breton Festival of Speed, in association with the Isle of Man TT. And if you want to check out the official website, you will find it at cbfestivalofspeed.com. That's CB, as in Charlie Bravo, festivalofspeed.com. No spaces or anything like that, just cbfestivalofspeed.com. I got an email the other day from Alert MotoGPOD listener Martin LaBrosse about a subject that is more than a little alarming. Now, I've kind of edited his email quite a bit, so any mistakes in it are mine and mine alone. But Martin writes, I'm a Canadian living and working in Taiwan, Republic of China, and we've been getting live MotoGP races on ESPN Star Sports for the past several years. However, ESPN Star Sports recently announced that they will not broadcast any MotoGP events live or replay as of 2006. Instead, the time slots will be filled with Asian Snooker Championship replays. Okay, I'm going to break here real quick to say, snooker. I mean, you know, pool and billiards and all that are very, very cool, very good fun. But come on, snooker on TV? Come on. Well, in any case, I couldn't find this official announcement anywhere, so I asked Martin where he learned about it, and apparently Martin got this information from a guy who works in the satellite TV industry who also said that even the Formula One coverage was going to be reduced. So it's a little bit unofficial news, but there is no mention of MotoGP on the ESPNStar.com website for Taiwan, and the only press releases or mentions or anything that I could find We're from way back in September, just talking about broadcasting the remainder of the 2005 season all over Asia and not really concentrating on Taiwan or anything like that. So I'm really thinking that Martin has the straight scoop here. Martin continues, motorcycles are coming into the market steadily here since Taiwan joined the World Trade Organization in 2002. A simple 5-day course gives a person a license to ride any kind of motorcycle, so many first-time riders are going for high-powered sport bikes. Many of these riders end up crashing hard, injuring themselves and other road users. In order to discourage any bad influences from racing, many people believe that the government has simply chosen to pressure ESPN Star Sports to drop MotoGP. Given that the government here has already expressed its distaste for motorcycles and any form of competition related to them, for instance by applying extremely high import tariffs and requiring emission tests that make even California models fail, this is completely plausible. Now, as far as motorcycle sales go, Taiwan is doing very well despite these high import tariffs. Here are some dealer prices for popular bikes in Taiwan, and there's not a whole lot of room for negotiating a lower price. A new Yamaha R1 will set you back 550,000 new Taiwan dollars, which translate to about $17,000 US. 17 grand, holy crap. An R1 here costs you what? A little over 11,000. But wait, check this out. BMW R1200 GS, 850,000 new Taiwan dollars, $26,400 US. That's a motorcycle that starts at 14.7 here in the United States, which you're talking almost double. Kawasaki Z1000, 500,000 new Taiwan dollars, which equals out to about 15,500 US. Again, almost double the US price of $84.99. That's amazing. Wow. So in this instance, Martin continues, MotoGP, World Superbike, or any other form of televised motorcycle racing would be welcomed by importers and dealers. And it is, of course. So who's to blame for the loss of televised motorcycle racing? Well, the answer is easy to find. It's the same guys who impose high import duties on motorcycles and impose impossible-to-reach EPA emission regulations. The latest Euro environmental standards and the California specs are the most environmentally friendly regulations to date. And yet the local EPA agency in Taiwan constantly fails new models at the import testing center. On the other hand, you can look around anywhere you go in Taiwan and you'll see cars, trucks, and old two-stroke scooters puffing more smoke into the atmosphere than any modern motorcycle will over a 10-year period. It's nuts, and it's just all in the face of owners and riders. And it's not just emissions. For instance, BMW had a close call with a new K1200R. The EPA claimed that it had a noise problem. They said that it was louder than its fared sister bike, the K1200S. You know, no kidding. One has a fairing and the other one doesn't. So BMW had already sold a few dozen units and they were sweating hard over this. And finally, it took a high-ranking BMW Motorrad Germany official to come down and clear things up. So in all of this, MotoGP plays a small part because you would think that any kind of influence that would help boost sales and safety would be welcomed. But over issues of pride and distaste for things out of the government's control, the government will do their best to eliminate it. So, okay, well, thank you very much for that article, Martin, and the news. It's interesting stuff. Like I said, it's a little disturbing, and it's more than a little alarming for residents of Taiwan that they're going to be losing their MotoGP. I'd be sweating it. But it also sounds like a government that is actively trying to discourage motorcycles, which, you know, we here in the U.S. have never seen that before, have we? You know, maybe so, but not to such an extent. That does definitely sound like a different ball of wax over there. I hope things improve for you over there, Martin. I really do. And like I said, thanks again. Okay, here's some bad news with possible serious consequences for MotoGP in general and Carlos Checa in particular. Team Honda Pons issued a press release last Wednesday saying that after 25 consecutive seasons competing in the Motorcycle Racing World Championships, the team will not participate in the 2006 MotoGP season. Due to various circumstances at the end of the 2005 season, and after a successful partnership of 3 years, Team Honda Pons failed to renew its agreement with title partner Camel, and difficulties in finding sponsorship for the 2006 season have prompted the team to take the decision to pull out of competition for this year. The team will now concentrate all its efforts on consolidating its MotoGP project for 2007, where it aims to return to competition with a competitive package that can fight for the world championship title. Cito Pons, in the meantime, will continue to serve in his role as president of the International Road Racing Teams Association, where he will be principally involved in the evolution of the MotoGP World Championship and the renewal of the agreement between IRTA and championship organizers Dorna Sports SL, which is not affiliated with MotoGP OD. Well, this certainly, definitely hoses Carlos Checa. Checa probably thought that he'd landed on his feet when he signed with Pons for 2006, and, you know, now he's screwed. On Thursday, there was a post on his website at carloscheca.com basically saying that he's very disappointed, but that he refuses to feel sorry for himself after his team, you know, left him in the lurch like this. Carlos wrote on that website, "This decision, so close to the start of the 2006 preseason, leaves me in a very complicated situation with regard to the future, because I find myself with no remaining alternatives that would allow me to challenge for decent results. It is particularly ironic that, after looking towards the future with utter confidence in a project that would see me riding a Honda with a team that know me well and in which I have complete faith, things have swung around so dramatically and left me out in the cold." Checa continues, "In the face of this disappointing situation, I am determined not to let my guard down, because I am, and always have been, a fighter. Circumstances have left me out of the championship against my will, but I still consider myself as an active rider, and I wouldn't rule out anything with respect to the future." Here's what I'm wondering. Is there maybe a very, very slight possibility that Checa will end up riding with Lucio Cecinello's Team Carrera LCR, you know, alongside Casey Stoner? Maybe there's a Spanish sponsor kind of waiting in the wings that couldn't quite step up to the plate enough for Cito Pons, and LCR is going to need all the help they can get, so, you know, they're going to want that money, I'm sure. And Honda will surely want to use those motorcycles, the ones that Checa would have ridden at Pons. I'm also thinking that Dorna is not going to want to lose another rider, you know, especially a Spanish rider. On the other hand, I thought earlier that Dorna wouldn't want to lose a whole team, and that Dorna would jump through hoops to assist Pons, and obviously that didn't seem to work out. Although maybe Dorna offered and Pons refused, who knows? Or maybe I'm just reading too much into the whole thing and Dorna's just letting nature take its course. I guess we will see soon enough what's going to happen, and, you know, good luck to Carlos Checa.
Check out the next episode of Road Racer Podcast, the podcast about amateur motorcycle road racing, AMA news, and interviews with motorcycle road racers. I'm your host, John Bunce, an amateur motorcycle racer. For more information, check out roadracerpodcast.com.
Well, I tried to get a telephone interview going on with Nikki Hayden, and I got shot down, damn it. It's really tough to contact these guys, and I had to kind of do an end-around trick to ask about it even, and I hope I didn't tick too many people off doing that. But in the end, I didn't even get past the PR people. But I did get some email answers to a few questions that I sent in from Nikki Hayden, so here's a mini email interview with Nikki Hayden. Question number one. Besides Laguna Seca this past season, is there one MotoGP race that you are in that stands out as especially memorable for you, and why? Nikki writes back, my two other pole positions were fun for me. Most of the races towards the end of the season have good memories, so it would be difficult to choose just one. Question number two. Do you have a favorite circuit of any of the ones that you've raced? Do you have a different favorite from a spectator's point of view? Nikki replied to that, Laguna is my favorite, but you probably could have guessed that one. I really like Phillip Island as well. For the spectators, Laguna has the corkscrew and many natural viewing spots, so that mixed with the atmosphere from the crowd, I have to say Laguna is the best. And question number three. What do you think about the new 800cc engine rules for 2007, and how do you think it will affect smaller teams? Nikki's answer to that one was, well, I like speed, and I like to go as quick as possible, but it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, I want to be on top of our sport, and I don't care if it's riding scooters. I'm there to win. So to answer the question, I'm looking forward to it. It's difficult to say how it will affect smaller teams. At this stage, I really can't answer that. And then Nikki closed out by saying that he'd like to take the opportunity to wish all the fans a really happy new year. So there you have it. A very, extremely mini email interview with Nikki Hayden. Not very long, I will admit, sorry. But it's a start. I'm going to keep trying, you know. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Keep asking. Eventually somebody will say no or whatever. But eventually, actually, what will happen is that we'll have some actual interviews with some of these guys. Maybe not, you know, face-to-face unless I'm really lucky, but at least over the phone or Skype or something like that. So stay tuned for that. You can be sure that I will let you know when it's going to happen. All right. This is number two of the MotoGP tech segments that I kind of started to do. Last week I talked a little bit about tires, and that segment wasn't that great. It didn't turn out as well as I'd hoped it would. I don't think I spent enough time for such an important subject. Like I said, I personally kind of have a thing about tires. I think they're very interesting little items, so I'm sure that I'm going to be revisiting that subject before long. But for segment number two, we are working our way from the ground up. So let's talk about brakes. Brakes. All the quickness and top speed in the world isn't going to do a motorcycle racer much good if he can't slow down in an equally impressive manner. The type of brakes that are used in motorcycle racing has evolved from ancient, ineffective block and rim arrangements in the very early days to drum brakes like those used from the 20s through the 70s to the disc brakes that we see today. The very old-fashioned block and rim brake was a little bit like a hybrid of a drum brake and a disc brake. There's a rim, something like a modern disc, but sort of much thicker, was fastened to the wheel of the motorcycle, and then a brake block, which was something like the shoe of a drum brake, was squeezed against that outside circumference of the rim. Pretty much like something that you'd see on a wagon wheel, and probably just about as effective. So, terrifying, I am sure. I'm sure that you all know that, drum brakes use one or more internal shoes applied to the inside of a drum, while disc brakes use a caliper that's applied externally to both sides of a disc, basically clamping that disc rotor within the caliper. Disc brakes are much more effective and they weigh a lot less, but they also cost more than a drum setup, which is why, many regular old civilian cars that you buy still use drum brakes on the rear wheels. I'm not really sure why that's true still, because disc brakes are actually simpler and they use less parts than drums, but that's the way it is. Oddly enough, disc brakes weren't very common on Grand Prix motorcycles until well into the 70s, even though they were appearing on street bikes way before that. In fact, disc brakes were standard on the Honda CB750 from 1969 on. Many of the drum brakes that were used on racing bikes in the 60s and 70s were extremely powerful, but they still had the disadvantages that all drum brakes have, one of which, say, is poor performance in the rain and terrible fading problems. In any case, racing motorcycles use disc brakes now, and they have done so for quite some time. MotoGP bikes use a radial mount for the caliper. A radial mount is something that started to show up as standard equipment on street bikes over the past couple of years, and we're now kind of at the point where radial brakes are pretty much mandatory if a manufacturer wants any kind of street cred for his sporty bike. But radial brakes aren't really as revolutionary as the manufacturers would like you to think. Mounted caliper is fastened to the bike using bolts that are parallel to the wheels and at each end of the caliper, while a standard brake caliper is bolted on with bolts that are perpendicular to the wheel, and they're typically only at one edge of the caliper, which is closest to the trailing edge, meaning closest to the forks on the back side of the front wheel. That's more or less it. What radial brakes offer is improved stiffness. They're just simply less bendy than that standard brake caliper because of the way they're bolted on. Because, they're mounted on both ends of the caliper and the torsional forces involved in the direction of the bolts and all that kind of stuff. That means that the pad is actually in contact with the brake rotor over the whole surface area of the pad instead of kind of tweaking so that the only part of the pad that is gripping is, sort of the end of the rotor, just a segment of the pad. Like I said, a good thing, but not exactly a revolution in design. The discs that were used in the 70s were made of steel or iron, similar to the brakes on a production motorcycle today, but modern MotoGP bikes use carbon brakes and disc, which offer significant advantages over steel. For one, carbon discs are lighter. A set of carbon discs and pads weighs about half as much as a similar set of standard brakes, which is going to save them anywhere about 3.5 pounds or so, or more, about 1.6 kilos for our metric friends. This is unsprung weight, which is the most important kind of weight that you can save on a motorcycle or any vehicle, really. And we'll talk a little bit about unsprung weight in our suspension segment, but for now, let's just say that it's very, very important. And the weight saved by these lighter brake discs is also rotating weight, which is another area where it's important to save weight. The reason that rotating weight is important is that it affects the handling of the motorcycle, because in a turn, the rider has to overcome the gyroscopic forces of the rotating mass of those wheels. So saving weight on that brake disc means that the wheel weighs less, thereby causing the bike to be more responsive because the rider has less gyroscopic force to overcome. So 3.5 pounds may not sound like much, but it makes a big difference. And weight savings in racing motorcycles are generally a little bit here, a little bit there, and pretty soon it starts to add up to significant differences. And actually, to save over 3 pounds in one part is a big difference when you consider that the other savings are measured in grams or fractions of grams on a racing motorcycle. Carbon discs also offer a slight improvement in braking consistency compared to metal. With steel discs, the feeling that the rider has from the brakes will change over the course of a race, but the carbon system is more consistent and should feel pretty much exactly the same to the rider at the end of the race as it did at the start. However, carbon brakes also have their disadvantages. The carbon used in brakes is hygroscopic, meaning that it sucks up water. For this and other reasons, braking force is just non-existent until the discs and pads reach their operating temperature, which, depending on condition, can be anywhere between 750 and 1200 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's fairly warm, or 400 to 650 degrees Celsius there in metric. Temperature is the reason that most of the teams typically use a steel brake at the rear wheel. That rear brake isn't used nearly as much, and you'd have trouble maintaining the operating temperature. And it's also the main reason that you don't see carbon-carbon brakes on street bikes. You just never would get the brakes up to temp in normal riding on the road. Not to mention that they don't last all that long, and that they're kind of spendy, typically, you know, thousands of dollars for a set of discs and pads. So because of that water absorption, that hygroscopic property, carbon brake discs do not work worth a crap in the wet. And the teams will use a conventional steel or iron rotor for wet races. I would think that the teams would actually use iron brakes, or either ductile or cast iron, because they have better friction properties than steel or stainless steel, but almost all the info that I've seen on these websites says steel. So I'm not sure if that's because the brakes actually are made of steel, or if that's just an error from the PR weenies that actually write the websites. So it's kind of hard to say. One way or the other, they ain't carbon. One quick way to tell the difference between steel and carbon brakes is that steel discs have holes or slots cut or drilled into the discs, while carbon brakes do not. The holes and slots and that occasional wavy edged pattern that you see on motorcycle brakes nowadays are there for several reasons. First of all, it saves some weight. Remember, you know, every tiny bit counts. Second, it helps cool the brake disc. Third, those holes and slots clean the brake pads, removing brake dust from that surface of that pad as it passes over the holes and slots. And fourth, and this is especially true for slots and the wave patterns on the edge, it gives the pad better grip because it's kind of almost like the calipers, you know, the brakes are being applied for the first time whenever that pad passes over a slot or that wavy edge. Plus, of course, there's the bonus factor that it looks really cool, which is very, very important. You know, one never want to forget about that, especially on a street motorcycle, right? So that does it for today's segment. Hopefully it was interesting. And as usual, comments, questions, suggestions are welcome. Just send me an email. The address is always motogpod@motogpod.com. That's going to do it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you very much again for downloading it. Make sure to tune in next week. We continue our tech segments. Hopefully, we're going to be doing suspensions, if all goes well with my writing of that. And I'm sure that I'll find some other fun stuff to talk about as well. And if all else fails, don't forget that it's only about 7 weeks until the World Super Duper Bike season starts in Qatar at the end of February. The end is in sight for road racing fans in the Northern Hemisphere. This is kind of cool. Thanks again to Mike Falaise for his donation and Martin LaBrosse for his in-depth coverage of the ESPN story there in Taiwan. I truly appreciate your support, guys. It's very cool. And everyone out there, remember, I like getting email, comments, suggestions, hate mail, clever insults, whatever. I read them all and I reply to them all as well. So the email address is always motogpod@motogpod.com. Love to hear from you. And until then, that's about it. And I will talk to you later. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL, and despite the fact that Bob has the audio charisma of a talking fish, the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.